start today's class just a moment. Today we'll be discussing the Sabbath and the Shemitah cycle, the sabbatical year, based on a Ramban, a commentary of Nachmanides in Leviticus 25:2. Maybe we'll start just in about 1 minute.
For example, tabernacles or Passover or Shavuos.
Okay. And let me see if you're picking up the sound okay online. Just type audio okay. I see somebody's asking if the sound. Okay, just type that in the bottom of your screen. Okay, so those 2 days what we discussed last week, right, Doug? The fact that the Sabbath and the sabbatical year are the only ones. That's the opening words of the Ramban, right?
Right.
Okay. And we see that, so we have to find out what is common between those two. And he talks, and he hints to the fact that there's a fundamental of the Torah system. And that fundamental is, we're not sure whether we are king or not, because again, when somebody great as the Ramban makes a statement like that, it makes you a little, it questions whether or not you hit on his point, but if you see a true point, so there's a benefit, of course, in that. So that's what we're just suggesting, is that there are a few points here, which I think are very important. And I'm not suggesting that's his intent, but I will suggest them as important ideas. Okay. Now, give me just 1 second, okay? Based on that, let's take where he talks about, it's about halfway through in this Ramban. And this is what he says, he feels the allusion is to, and why the Torah only in two places refers to days as a Sabbath unto God. And what does that mean, Sabbath unto God? Of course, it's not for God. It's for us to recognize concepts about God. So he says, pretty much halfway through, he says, behold, the days allude to that which was created in Genesis, which in Hebrew we call it Ma'aseh Bereishis, the works of creation. But he's talking about what happened in the past. When it says days, that means that when we celebrate the Sabbath, it's a daily cycle. Okay, it's every 7 days. So of course, what Sabbath is all about is to remind the person, and also for the observer, to demonstrate to the rest of the world, all members of mankind, the concept of creation. So we mimic what the Creator did. We abstain from any creative activity on the seventh day. But then he says the years allude to that which will be in the creation of all the days of the world. That means the years, the cycle of years, where every seventh year we let the land lay fallow and we don't work it. So this now, he says, alludes to what will be in the creation of all the days of the world. So he's talking about a point in the future. Those are his words. And it's from here that we used it as a springboard to discuss what I was suggesting. So what I wanted to suggest was as follows. And there's something also interesting, is that it's not only the seventh day and the seventh year, but then you also have the cycle of every half century, every 50th year. That means after seven units of seven-year periods, which is 49. So the 50th year now is the Yovel, the Jubilee. And you see also the Ramban also mentioned in another place that the world is to have in its entirety, from Adam until the Messiah, is going to be 6,000 years or 6 units of time. And the 7,000 year, that beginning of the year 7,000, will then be when the Messianic era will be ushered in. So it seems that, you know, very interesting idea. And that is that when God created the world, so some could look at those 7 days, the 6 days of creation and the seventh day of rest, as just something that we commemorate. But what I was suggesting is that it's not just something to commemorate, but as the Ramban is stating here, this is really a map for the entire existence of mankind, not just a seven-day period. That's what the Ramban means when he says that the years will allude to what will be. So, just to clarify, the seven original days really are to be a model for mankind on not just a seven-day basis, but on the ultimate basis. That means at the end of time when the Messianic era comes in. So what is the model? The model is that there are 6 days where a person works, he has to toil, and on the seventh, which really we say in our prayers every Friday night, we say that although Sabbath was the last thing in creation, it was the first thing that entered God's mind. Meaning a day where the involvement of the physical is not allowed, but it's a day where we're completely involved in intellectual pursuits. Because we're restricted from being involved in any creative activity. So that's what it means. It's really the objective of creation, is that God's goal for creation for man is he utilizes that component that no other creature has, the intelligence. And that is used only when he's not engaged in all his other preoccupations of work. So that's really what the model of creation is to say, here's 7 days, it's true, it's necessary to be involved in a certain amount of the physical world, but that is not the objective of creation. The objective of creation is the day of the Sabbath, when you are involved in using your intelligence. That's really the whole reason why I gave it to you, God says to man. So we see that those 7 days are not just to be a isolated instance, a one-time event, but as the Ramban says, the years allude to what will be, meaning that we now take that seven-unit cycle, and it's transposed now, not just on today's, but now it's transposed onto a seven-year. It's following the creation. That's where the whole concept of the sabbatical comes from. And that's why he says these are the only two places in the Torah where it says it's Sabbath to God. Because the sabbatical year, again, is it's protracting that model of the Sabbath, which is a seven-day cycle, onto a year cycle. And then from there, it's protracted even longer onto a bigger target, a 50-year cycle. And then the final cycle that it's protracted, it's transposed onto, is over the entire existence of all human generations, from Adam until the Messiah, would be considered like a six-unit period. That's what man is involved in on the grand scheme. He's involved in the physical, and he always has to go back to it. But ultimately, in the era of the Messiah, it's going to be like he quotes, the Ramban quotes here. He says, on the seventh day, what was the song that they sang on the Sabbath? They said in the future, they sang about the day which will be entirely Sabbath and a rest of the internal world. So he says the eternal world, because that's according to the Ramban's view, is the when the Messianic era ushers in, that is the future world, according to Ramban. Maimonides holds the future world is really a non-physical existence. The person passes away, and then he enjoys his repose in a non-physical state. But according to both views, the objective of that era is going to be wisdom. So that's when so the Ramban brings in this point that future state will ultimately be just like a a Sabbath. So just like on the Sabbath, we're completely involved in wisdom. So that future state of the Messianic era will be an era where we're endlessly involved. And that's really the objective. So when God mapped out, when he made creation, it wasn't just for the sake of creating the physical and then resting. It was in order to show what the whole model really is for man. That there should be a seventh day or an ultimate state. Because the seventh day comes to an end. The eighth day again starts over the cycle. But in the future, it's not going to do that. It's going to finalize itself in an endless seventh day. And that endless seventh day will be the Messianic era that doesn't end. And the Kuzri you're asking, so Alma Ba will be like Shabbos. Meaning to say that, yes, according to the Ramban, it'll be an existence where human beings will all recognize God, and where it'll be very easy to obtain our physical needs. And like we mentioned last week, Doug, we talked about also, I just mentioned it as a side point, but it's true that in Adam's original state in the Garden of Eden, there was no need for clothing. The whole state of man was not to be involved in morality. It was to be involved in truths, because there are two areas of knowledge. There's the absolute truth, which is either something is true or something is false, and that's what we're involved in when we study the Torah and sciences. Then there's a lower level involvement, and that would be morality. Is this good for me? Is this bad for me? But that was not part of Adam's design originally. That was only given to him because he demonstrated how he could sin so quickly. So it's sort of like a secondary break system that a person's about to sin, so now he feels a certain amount of guilt. His conscience kicks in. And hopefully that will hold him back from doing the sin. So that was actually an act of kindness that not God gave that. So that's why Adam was not embarrassed at first when he was not wearing any clothing, because morality didn't exist. So there was no assessment that being naked had any value. That only occurs to a person who has morality, which all of us have, of course. But it is an interesting design when we think about this, that these first 7 days were really to indicate to us how the whole world will eventually unfold. It will be following this six-segment design and culminating in a final, endless seventh segment, which is the Messianic era. And that's something which is stamped on the daily cycle, the yearly cycle, the centennial cycle, and the entire generations from Adam to Messiah. And by you see the fact that it continues to grow in its duration, in its range, it points, like the Ramban says, the years allude to that which will be in the creation of all the days of the world. Now it fits in. Okay, let me just pause here. So there any questions or comments? And Ruchot, if you could just keep the questions to the topic, all right? Thank you. All right, Doug, Cal, how's that? Is that clear?
It is, Rabbi. I guess one question. We talked last time about sort of the 7 days and then 7 years and then the jubilee of seven of sevens. You've got these cycles within cycles within cycles. So do we know that the Messianic era will go on forever, or is it just a very long Shabbos, if you will, in a larger cycle, and that they just keep going?
No, it will be the final state of humankind.
Okay.
There won't be an end.
Okay. And is it then, I guess, in prophecy that the earth with the Messianic era on it goes on forever?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, that would be the ultimate state. You see that God's will is that there are existences, for example, the angels I'm referring to, that perceive his wisdom. We were talking yesterday in Temple, we were talking about a statement. My friend Max had a question about a sentiment of King David. It's in, it's in Psalms 8, 4, and 5. It's chapter 8, verses 4 and 5, and it's King David is saying, "When I see your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars." So he says, "What is man that you should be mindful of him, and the son of man that you should contend with him, or remember him, or deal with him in terms of reward and punishment?" So I'm trying to remember why this came up. I think it was in connection with Rabbi Chait's class that he gave on Shavuos. But the point is that he sees the heavens as being so grand and man as being minuscule. But then King David goes on, and he says, placed them just below the angels. This is the next verse. So perhaps that's what King David is answering. He's saying that although creation is fantastic and brilliant, and the wisdom, the works of your fingers, that's what he means, that he sees the works of God's fingers. Of course, God is not physically, has no fingers, but he means to say that which creates something with care and design, so that's what fingers point to. Somebody who's a craftsman. So he uses the human terminology, which is all we have, to refer to the great design that he sees in creation. So he's amazed at that, and he wonders, well, what's where does man come into all this? Well, what are we? We're nothing compared to all that. But then he says, no, you've placed us below the angels. Meaning, all of creation is not animate. So what good is it that these things exist if they have no perception of the Creator? So King David is saying the real, what could be a possible answer is that King David is saying that's why man has a place. He has a place because he has the ability to perceive all this wisdom. So it's not that the universe, in and of itself, is, I mean, again, we can't say why God created the universe, but we can talk about King David's sentiment that he just sees tremendous wisdom out there. So what is our place here? Our place is, he says, that you made us a little bit below the angels, that we have the ability to perceive. So the only difference between us and the angels is that we have a body and they don't have a body. And but you see, God created angels as well. He created existences that can have a perception of Him, which is a great kindness, because the enjoyment that an intelligent being has when it sees the wisdom is immense. So God's creating things that can now have tremendous enjoyment and wisdom. And that, you know, angels don't have they don't expire. I mean, what would cause them to cease to exist? There's nothing physical. Now, let me see a few questions on screen here. Kuzuri, you're writing, doesn't morality have to do with not stealing? And yet once Adam asked not to take from the tree of the Etadas is not to steal. No, but he didn't have morality yet. He just knew that it was the truth that God gave this command. And you don't need morality in order to follow a true point. So although he didn't have morality, a command was befitting his design. He could understand that God is saying, I am the one who is the creator, you are the subject, and this one tree is off limits. Okay, and Ruchot, you're asking, do souls stop transmigrating at the final seventh day? I don't know what you mean by transmigrating. If you're talking about reincarnation, so that's not something that Judaism holds of. Okay, because we see that Moses tells the people, I mean, where do we know that the reincarnation is not part of a Jewish belief system? Because Moses tells the people that either choose life or choose death when he presents the Torah to them. So if a person is choosing death, so it's not life. So that means it has to be terminal. So Moses couldn't tell the people to choose life or death if a person could die and then come back again. And Sadia Gaon has a whole rejection on this belief that you keep coming back. I mean, I think that belief really comes from is a sense that a person does not want to have ultimate responsibility for his errors, so he always has a second chance. Okay. And also that the part of that belief is that the person comes back in order to correct his flaws. But ask any person today if they remember being somebody else, nobody will ever tell you yes. So if you can't remember being the person in a previous life that sinned, so you can't recall your errors. There's no way to correct. So again, that itself is a rejects that notion. Okay. But you see, with this system of the Sabbath and the sabbatical year, God is indicating to us, he's trying to, another method of indicating what our real objective is. And that is to try to immerse ourselves in a life of wisdom over a life of the physical, whatever that would entail to each an individual person's, you know, emotional gratifications. But the bottom line here is that will be the eventual state. And just as Adam had that capacity before he sinned, and then finally he was punished with death, not that he died on the spot when he ate, but that now death was part of his design. Originally he was not going to die. So we see that he would have lived forever, and he would have been involved in that great state. So ultimately it looks like this is what is going to happen. We're coming full circle, and this is really what God's plan ultimately is, what it was at the outset.
Rabbi?
Yes.
My understanding is that this is based on a relationship to God, though, that it's God's will, but it's also man's worthiness.
Man's worthiness? I mean, it's part of God's design, but we have to, yes. I think
when I look at it as, you know, the Jews are judged as a nation, but is mankind then too judged as a whole, like including the Jews and the Gentiles, and it's all man's worthiness?
Yes, I think Rambam speaks about that in those laws of tshuva, that the whole world would be judged if the majority of the world was sinning. I have to take a look and see if that's accurate. I'm pretty sure. I mean, you see that God judged the five cities, Sodom and Amorah. So you see that God does judge the world on that basis. Kuzari, if your screen goes off, just hit the return key. It should bring it back on. And yes, I'm saying that based on Sadi Go, and then just in terms of the words of the Torah, that this thing of Gilgul Neshamot, or the reincarnation, is not something that we see. It goes against words that Moses spoke. All right, it may be popular. But in order to, you know, follow a position, we don't go by how many people say it, or even the reputation of a person who says a position. Right? Even Moses made mistakes. So, you know, certainly anybody today or any position can be incorrect unless we see that it's proven, 100%. So we don't look at the popularity or the reputation in order to determine whether something is true or false. We think about the concept itself. Okay. And we see also another point, that the Maimonides has what is, he formulated the 13 principles of Judaism. What are the Ikurim, the essential fundamentals? And the 13th is the days of the Messiah. So why is that there? So Rabbi Mann wants to give an answer to that, because really the fundamentals are referring to God, our concept of God, that he was the first, he's the creator, that he creates prophecy, that he created Moses to be the leader of the prophets, that he rewards and punishes. But what does the days of the Messiah have to do in terms of our opinion, our understanding of a God? So Rabbi Reuben Mann wanted to say, a nice idea, that this really is the last piece of the puzzle that is not perfect yet. Everything else on earth is perfect, except for man. So that reflects poorly in terms of a creator that we say is perfect. But if we accept the concept of there being an ultimate state where man does reach perfection, that reflects now on God and shows that God did create man with the ability that he will ultimately be perfected. So that is a reflection of God's perfection. You see that? That if the 13 principles are to give us each one is to give us another concept in connection with God, so the principle of there being the Messianic era tells us about God, because it shows us that his creation of man will reach perfection. So that shows that God's creation of man is a perfect creation. It will reach its ultimate state.
So, Rabbi, how do we reconcile that idea with kind of looking around at the world, which over the course of time seems in a way to be devolving, not evolving, in terms of its understanding or of real ideas? It doesn't seem like too much of the world is focused on true ideas about Hashem.
Right, that doesn't mean that over the next few years there can't be something which makes a change in that.
And would that, I agree, it does seem like something would have to happen. Would we presume that that would be a natural outgrowth of mankind, or that that's going to be some kind of divine intervention by Hashem to make that happen?
The prophet says that. He says the words, "Be'itu achishena," that in its proper time it will come, or I will usher it in. Meaning God will do something to initiate this.
Oh, interesting. So then that would kind of raise the question of, if I simplify that we're sort of marking time here until the appropriate time comes, and then Hashem steps in and does something so that the world comes to recognize that He is the one and only true God.
Right.
So then I would ask, what is the point of the marking time? Because it seems like, you know, life would be better if He just stepped in and did that today.
When you say, what is the point of marking time, you mean, what is the point of the sixth unit and seventh unit model?
No, what's the point of the delay, I guess, in Hashem intervening to bring the entire world to the recognition of Him?
I don't know.
Okay.
Perhaps we'll, you know, if we're lucky enough to be alive at that point, so perhaps we'll be able to look back and see why. Another point, though, just as we're talking, just came to mind that I want to remind, you know, from last week, is that the concept of resurrection of the dead. So you see, if God is saying that the ultimate state is going to be in that point in the future, so then what about all the generations that passed away before that? Are they going to lose out? Evidently not, because that's what resurrection is, that they will enjoy that point in time as well. So the actual perfection of those people who passed away will not be lost. They will enjoy that as well.
And that's where man's worthiness must come in, huh?
Yeah, will he be resurrected or not? That's true.
And I suppose once that does occur, it may very well be possible to look back and fully understand why. Sort of like when you're a child, you really don't know why your parents are doing what they do until you get to be an adult yourself, and then you look back and the whole picture makes sense.
Yes, that could very well be. And hopefully we'll see the whole scheme of things. And you know, like this itself, this one isolated Ramban itself is an enjoyable idea. I never saw this concept before, that those seven primordial days really have far-reaching effects. You just think that they're, you know, sealed away in time, sort of like, you know, in amber, you know, in suspended animation, you know, not, you know, without any type of, you know, sort of like the, that they find, you know, insects that are, you know, hundreds of thousands of years old, trapped in amber, perfectly preserved. But like lifeless, and but we see that's not the case. Those, according to this Ramban, those 7 days really have a never-ending life of their own. That its design is to teach something, and that the world will follow its design. So that itself, that isolated days that themselves have expired, have not in terms of their effects. But it's a striking idea. Because it's a contrast. You're taking days which expire, but you're saying these days actually act as a blueprint for the entire existence of humankind, all the way into the future. But God's indicating right there, in a very subtle way, that this is really what the earth is for, what mankind is for. And then we're seeing, like, King David, he was amazed when he sees the heavens. I mean, it could very well be that God made those heavens so vast and amazing to us to give us that awe and to give us that appreciation. Maimonides says, how does a person come to the love of God? By studying the Torah and creation. But in one place, he just says the creation. In his Mishneh Torah, is how does a person come to the love of God? The creation itself, you study that.
So, Rabbi, at the beginning of this section of Nachmanides, he says, now here, the rabbis have roused our attention to one of the great secrets of the Torah. Is this our, at this point, our, I guess, our best interpretation of what he means by that great secret?
I don't know what his secret means at all. I'm just suggesting ideas that I see in his words. But if it says something like that, it's sort of like, you know, it shakes your security in your own. Is this really what this great rabbi means? If he didn't say that, I might have been a little bit more sure. It seems I would just be happy with the ideas himself. I mean, in this one line, I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a lot more. I mean, Rabbi Chait himself was very hesitant to say anything more than the one idea. He wanted to say a nice idea here, that what is the concept that the word Sabbath to Hashem, you know, a Sabbath unto God, are only used in connection with Saturday and with the sabbatical year. So he said one idea, very nice, that is to show that the God of creation is synonymous with the God of nature, meaning the one who controls, that sustains the world. So the God of creation does the 7 days, but then the fact that the world works in a certain cycle in terms of the crops, and we rest in the land, so by not resting it, and I think his idea was that you'll see that God will give his blessing, that the 6 years produce will last those 3 years, because if you're not working the seventh year, so what are you eating? You're eating from the sixth year. And the eighth year, you're first planting again. You still don't have any new growth, so you're still relying on the sixth year. That's the second year that you're relying on the 6 years' produce. And the ninth year, when things start to grow, you're still eating until you reap from the crop. So that the ninth year, you're first starting to eat again from new growth. So that means the produce of the year six has to provide you for year six, seven, and eight. And God will make that change regularly, which is an amazing thing. That means every seventh year, year six is going to yield three times its normal produce. Okay? So when we see that, we see that the God of creation who gave us the Torah is telling us to follow these laws, so both ideas are true, that he's the creator, but he's also the one who sustains the laws of nature, which are expressed through our observance of the sabbatical year. So he's showing this, because sometimes people will say, yeah, God created the world, and then he left. And then, you know, nature is its own, you know, independently functioning sphere of things. It has nothing to do with God, but it's just the opposite. There was what Rabbi Chait said over Shuros. Yeah, there's one thing here I just want to look. Yeah, it's interesting. In his Sefer Mitzvos, in his book of where the Maimonides counts all the 613 and explains each one. So there he says, the third mitzvah is the command to love him, may he be raised and may he be praised. And this is when we ponder and understand his laws and his works. Until we reach and we come into a delight in the purpose of delight. In the objective of that enjoyment. And that's the love that's really obligated upon us. And God obligates us to have a tremendously enjoyable life. And that's through understanding his laws and his creations. And his Mishneh Torah, where he talks about this in the fundamentals, and it's a 2-2. He says, what is the way to love God? This is the laws of the Sodei Torah, the fundamental of Torah, in his Mishneh Torah. It's chapter 2 and it's law 2. And he asks, the first he says in law 1, he says, God that is honored and great and awesome, it's a command to love him and to fear him, as it says, and you should love God your God. It also says, God you should fear. Law 2 says, and how is the path to loving God? What is that path and to fear him? He says, at the time that a person ponders his works and his creations that are wondrous and that are great, and he sees from them God's wisdom, that there's no measuring of it, that there's no end to it, immediately he loves and praises and glorifies and desires, a great desire to know this great name. Meaning we can't say what the rabbis always refer to knowing God's name, because we can't know God himself. So they refer to it as knowing his name. You see, he doesn't say here anything about learning Torah as being a path to getting to that love. Here he talks about creation. And it always bothered me, this discrepancy. Why in one book does the Maimonides say that the way to love God is through his mitzvos and his creation? But here he just says creation. It's not consistent. But I'm wondering if perhaps in this book, the Mishneh Torah, so he's now talking about the fundamentals. So fundamentals have to be based on, maybe saying it's based on just the human design, and the human design pre-existed the Torah by almost 2,500 years. So you're going to tell me that because Abraham and Adam and Noah and all these people didn't have a Torah, that they missed out on really getting the true love of God? No. That's what he's talking about over here when he says the way to really love God is through studying creation, because that is completely sufficient. But in terms of once you have a system of Torah, so now it must also include the laws too. It can't be without it, because now that becomes God's will. And to omit that from the equation would then be lacking. Before the existence of the Torah, there was nothing lacking in terms of what man needed to reach God. And a lot of the Torah is really to address the shortcomings of man over all the millennia. So that's why we have so many laws not to follow the Canaanite people or the Egyptian ways. So once those things have been brought to the world stage and man is aware of them, now he must include in his approach to loving God, he has to include the Torah system, which addresses all of these shortcomings. All right, so that could explain the discrepancy. Okay, let me pause here, see if there's any questions or comments.
So just to make sure I'm understanding right, so he's saying in chapter 2, law 2, that you see the Creator through his creation.
Exactly. Now, you come to love him through that. The great delight that a person can enjoy in life is that amazing wisdom that he sees in studying creation.
Okay. Which is what was freely available to Abraham and all the people before the actual written Torah was given.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
By the way, you and Cal going to the Noahide conference?
We are.
Oh, very good.
And you will be there too?
Yeah, I'll be there on Sunday. I think I'm slated at 3 o'clock.
Excellent.
I know Rabbi Mann will be giving a class on Thursday and Friday. pretty sure, or maybe two classes on Thursday.
Rabbi?
Yes.
It seems like with our capacity to, fly all over the world and everything, that our potential to perceive God's creation is even greater now than it was when, man wasn't able to, travel all over the world, and yet we as a people don't recognize that.
I don't know what traveling over the world has to do with appreciating God. You want to explain?
Well, you see more of God's creation. We're able to go out into space and you see these beautiful, beautiful pictures and things of God's creation, and you think that there has to be a creator, because man certainly couldn't create something like that. And we're also able to see how when man gets in there and intervenes, man can mess up the balance of it, and that, initially God created everything in this balance, perfect balance.
Yeah, it's true, but I don't think that the original generations were limited because of travel. Again, Maimonides' formulation is, he ponders the creation. So that means that he has the ability to see, to see creation even before we had all this, man's travel, being out of space and all of it. I mean, that could also work against a person. I mean, the feeling of being able to dominate and send probes up to Mars like we had, 2 weeks ago. So, is God part of their whole mission over here? I don't know. I didn't really see too much verbiage on that. It's more in terms of NASA clapping. They applauded themselves. They were able to put this thing up there. A person could definitely use all these advances for knowing God, that's for sure. But I think that has to be that he initially has the fundamentals. So all of this research and exploration is used in the goal of appreciating God's wisdom more. But it could also be used just for practical advancement or curiosity or ego.
I wonder, somebody made a comment once that wealth, material wealth, will only make you more of what you already are. If you're kind and generous, then you'll use that for kind and generous purposes, and if you're greedy and so forth, then you'll become more greedy and miserly.
That's a good thing.
I wonder if the increase in knowledge and availability to see the world from space and so forth kind of follows along the same way, that if you are contemplative and aware and sensitive to the creation around you in your local area, having more of that information will give you more opportunity to be sensitive and aware of that, whereas if you simply see it as a conquering kind of thing and man's in control, that increased knowledge will make you more of that.
Yes, it's a very good saying. Makes sense. Any other questions?
I don't think we have any here. Have you picked a topic for the conference?
Yes, I'm going to be discussing some sections in the Talmud about the laws that were given to Adam and Noah, and go into them a bit individually. It talks about witchcraft. It talks about, breeding of species. There's argument in the Talmud regarding whether Adam had one command or did he have three commands, and how did he arrive at those commands. So, you know, talking about that state, initially, of what God's plan was for man right at the outset, in terms of the Noahide state, just to understand, like the Maimonides is saying, just even without the Torah, you can't say that man's original design was bereft of anything in terms of his purpose of loving God and being perfect. So we're going to take that up, and it's interesting few pieces in a few sections of that Talmud.
That sounds excellent. We will look forward to it.
Same here.
You're just flying down for the one day. You'll fly down that morning and then fly out after.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to stay that night, but I think I may come back that night. I'll have to see what my schedule is. But, I'll be coming in early Sunday morning. And I guess I'll have a few hours break until I have to, to discuss it, to give the class. And, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we will sure look forward to seeing you.
Same here. The conference, Mike is asking, in Ohio, the conference is 26th to the 29th in Fort Lauderdale. And if you go to the homepage of Masora, I believe the banner is there. You can take a look and click and go there. Look up Noahide Nations. That's who is sponsoring the event. All right, very good. So I guess we'll wrap it up here. And we'll see next. Yeah, we'll resume next week. Yeah, we'll resume next week, same time, 11:15.
Okay.
All righty.
Sounds good, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Okay, thanks. Okay, that wraps it up for today, and we'll continue next week, same time, 11:15, New York time. Have a good week, everybody.